Hello, I'm Michael Holmes, and it's my great pleasure to talk to Holly Elmore today. Holly, you are the executive director and the founder of Pause AI US. That's the US section of the global movement called Pause AI. And we will have to explain to our viewers and readers what Pause AI is. I think it's fair to say that your main goal is to stop the race towards superintelligence because you believe that this could, let's say, there's a high risk that this will lead to the extinction of humankind, that we will all be murdered by a superintelligence. Now, this may at first sound very implausible and strange and sort of like science fiction. I hope you can convince us today that this is a real danger and we should be scared of it, but on the other hand, that we can do it, we can stop it, and but we have to start caring about it now. So, what was the moment when you realized that you have to found this movement, this organization? And what is it all about?
Well, Pause AI, first of all, so yeah, I was a co-founder of the global movement, and I've been focusing on the US much of the time, and I founded the US group. It was global because we all, the early people involved, were so excited by this idea of a treaty to just not build superintelligence. And a lot of us, the reason that we were interested initially in forming Pause AI was the risk of extinction. This is something we had been thinking about for a long time. And when ChatGPT came out, a lot of us, felt like, oh my God, this is really happening. Like, I first heard of existential risk from AI back in grad school when I started grad school. And I thought, like I had a long time to get used to it. There was something I really didn't like about the idea, and I didn't like sort of the culture around it was very particular. It was like a very tech culture, but I
Very
had enough time to
geeky.
think about it myself. Sorry.
It's a very geeky culture, very.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't just that. Like, I was pretty geeky, but like I
Okay.
there was a kind of a transhumanist, like singularity, like fantasy angle to it often. And so I kind of bounced off of, and I see new people bouncing off of that vibe every day. But I had enough time to think about it myself, and I was in grad school for an evolutionary biology, and so I had the perspective that I needed to be able to take this threat seriously, because a lot of people, it's easy to take for granted, like the world we see, like it seems fairly stable, but if you look at the history of life, 99% of species are extinct. Like, this is something that happens all the time. And intelligence is a major reason. Intelligence in one species is a major reason that other species go extinct. Because they're pursuing their goals, they're changing the environment, they're better predators, they're and that drives other species extinct. And just because we think, well, I was going to say we don't witness that, but actually we do. I mean, why, the reason there's so many endangered species is humans, and it's because of our intelligence that they're endangered. It's not because, usually it's not because we want them dead, it's because we want to do something, and we want their habitat for something else, or and we edge them out, and it just it they do depend, no matter how long that species had a stable existence with all the equilibria required, we came and changed, we had a different variable, we increased our intelligence and our ability to make use of their resources or get through their defenses, and now it's upset, and you can, species really do go extinct. It's actually the default outcome. So I think
Yeah,
that's
we
an
should remember that like bears and sharks and so on are stronger than us. They're all some of them are faster than us. But when we have a gun, like then goodbye, I mean, we still win. And that's because of our
exactly.
intelligence, of course.
It's no, it's so intelligent. I think people tend to think of intelligence as one thing. They think of it as like book smart, and they don't think of that as very threatening. They think of that as like a nerdy person, but what intelligence is actually, I mean, it might be more accurate to call AI like artificial capabilities. Like, it's about being able to do stuff. It's about the ability to see through a lot of like possible futures and go to the one you want, like pick your goal. And so, I mean, that's an extremely dangerous ability. Like, imagine what a lot of people would do if they had more power. Like, this is, we're aware of this risk when it comes to like making sure that people don't have access to weapons of mass destruction and things like that. But people have trouble applying this to a disembodied intelligence. But, or people used to ask, I mean, back in the day, like 15 years ago, people used to like argue about whether the superintelligence would ever be able to get out of the box. Like, oh, we could make superintelligence, but it wouldn't be able to do anything in the box. And then the first thing, like nearly the first thing with ChatGPT was to put it on the internet and push integrations with other apps and just get it out there. So, like, there's a lot of questions that people used to have that were like stumbling blocks for worrying about dangers of superintelligence, like, just immediately proved to be not a problem at all. Like, there's really very few safeguards. They're just, now that these things exist, you know, chatbots, we can see how they have access. I mean, recently there was that whole thing with the, it's kind of a performance art thing with Moltbook, but it did demonstrate that the agents like now like can do, they can commission people to do stuff for them. You know, they can, even if it was just a demonstration of that ability, like that's something that they can do autonomously. And this is a product that's being pushed. So
You
like,
have to explain that a little bit, maybe as one example of what's going on, because
yeah.
they are starting to become harder to control. I mean, I think first we have to clarify that. I mean, first of all, you're not in general like an enemy of technological progress, and you're not even an enemy of AI in general, because AI is doing a lot of good things too, right? In healthcare and other areas.
I mean, I must say, I don't feel very warm toward it. You know, I kind of see it as a harbinger of something more dangerous. But if there were proper governance, it could be very good.
I think so far you could make the case that it's doing more good than harm. I think I would say so, but it's a tough call. I don't know. I don't.
Yeah, I guess I think more in terms of risk. And like, even now, I see the risk as very high. You know, like, I see us as being like very close. And I don't feel the need to, I there's this strong urge around me of like the people, especially like in Silicon Valley and like a lot of people, unfortunately, in the AI safety world, like really want to be cool, like in the eyes of tech people. And so there's a lot of like, you have to talk about how much you love AI and oh, there's the good kind of AI versus the bad kind. And yeah, I think there's like a lot of, I just see it as like any other powerful technology. Like I like nuclear power for being safe, and it's safe because of governance. Like I think it's really cool. I don't like love nuclear though. I mean, there's a lot of risk, you know? And that's a, I don't know, that's taken as like a dumb hick position, you know? But part of, I mean, this is more like a personal thing, that it's not a pause AI position. We're agnostic on everything but frontier AI. We want to pause frontier AI. But personally, I kind of like pushing, like, it's okay to not love
But
this
when you're
stuff.
talking
I
about
associate
AI,
it with really bad things.
I mean, the main thing is when you're scared, when you're saying that, there is a good chance that superintelligence will kill us all, I think it is important to explain we're talking about a completely different beast.
Say it's completely different at this point. Like, it's gonna incrementally just, you know, and we're not gonna be sure when it really gets dangerous. And certainly, I think there is an overhang of capabilities for AI right now. Like, the amount of like cyber attack damage that like current technologies can do, I think is like already pretty underutilized. And so, even if we paused right now, we would be dealing with a lot of negative stuff unleashed by these technologies being, you know, rolled out so quickly and with such poor oversight. So this is a thing. Darn, I lost my train of thought.
I'm not sure what's the best way to go about this. Maybe first we to make it more plausible to people who don't know anything about this is to can you give us a rough idea about what the major experts in the fields are saying? Because my understanding is that most of them, not all of them, really share your concerns. Maybe they don't think the risk is that high, but they all see the risk and they think it's very real. So that's, I think,
Yeah,
the
this
easiest
is.
way to make people take this seriously, at least.
This is a very, it's what's interesting is people, like the public sort of perceives that there's debate, but they don't understand like the things that the experts are debating are a really small subset of this is extremely dangerous. Like they're debating things like, is it as dangerous, you know, as possible, or is it like slightly less dangerous? Like the top three ML scientists ever, and you know, Joshua Bengio is the most cited scientist ever at this point, are in agreement that this is extremely dangerous, that like extinction is on the table. So Geoffrey Hinton, Joshua Bengio, and Ilya Sutskever are all in agreement about how dangerous this is. So you, it's an interesting situation because the
Geoffrey
scientific field.
Hinton got a Nobel Prize for his work on AI, right?
Yeah, in physics, because they shoehorn everything into physics. But
Yeah, sure.
yeah, so this is among experts. It's not doubted that this technology could be extremely powerful and risky. The thing that's being debated is more like, well, do we have a choice, or what kind of risk do we have to face? I mean, that's why you hear these AI company CEOs having ridiculous probabilities of Elon Musk says like 20% that AI, like superintelligence, kills
Yeah.
us. And
Sam
but then he
Altman
just
also
follows it up
20.
with like, oh, well, but you know, we have no choice. And like that's the kind of still like there's a perception that there's disagreement, but the disagreement is not about whether this is extremely dangerous. It's more about like, do we have to do anything about it? And like the public feels very differently. The public is says, of course we would have to do something about that if it were really happening. And they don't really like fully get that. Nobody in the know is like really seriously doubting that there could be at least very bad consequences, you know, if not extinction level. Pretty much
Sam
everyone
Altman, also
in
of
the know, is
OpenAI,
concerned.
said the risk is 20% of humankind going extinct by AI. And I think that's really confusing to people because he's building it. Same for Elon Musk. Like, which one is it? So that's also really hard to understand. I can't wrap my mind around their minds.
I call this dazzle camouflage. Like, I think, especially Sam Altman, he went on this big, like, charm offensive tour in 2023, post ChatGPT release, and testified before Congress and stuff. And I think he was expecting more hostility toward ChatGPT. And so he kind of opened with his argument then was like, this is so dangerous, and that's why we have to build it, because we have to, like, get it right. Or somebody else could build it. That's been an internal argument with, you know, AI makers, you know, even before that was public. And it so that was his justification for why they were building AI. But I think he was pleasantly surprised to find that people didn't need that much justification. Like everything was happening too fast, they didn't understand, and they thought like, well, this is just, there was the shock that the almost everybody felt when talking to ChatGPT, because they knew that they didn't think a computer could talk like that, and then they saw that, you know. But it was easy to forget. It's unfortunate that it's extremely easy to forget once you've kind of updated how you think. It's very easy to forget that you thought that was impossible, or you thought that that would mean something. I mean, remember the Turing test? Remember how people thought that would mean
You have
something?
to explain that
And
also. What was the Turing test?
yeah, the Turing test is, I mean, it's not really like a formal thing, but Alan Turing, the cryptographer, the famous mathematical
The
genius
godfather of computers,
from
basically,
World
right?
War II. But yeah, he's in many ways the founder, the father of computing. He thought about this question of artificial intelligence. By the way, he thought it would be dangerous, but he suggested like, okay, well, like one test of like whether you've achieved like a general intelligence is if you're in a controlled environment and you're talking to a computer and you're talking to a human, like if you can't tell that you don't know, it's blind. Can you tell which one is which? And that used to be treated as, I mean, so like that, I actually had a podcast called The Turing Test. Before people, there were like video games and movies and stuff about the Turing test. It was like thought to be this big, significant milestone. But then it happens, and people forget that they ever like thought that that was a big deal, or that like knowing the difference between humans and bots would is like a big problem. So it's, I we just my personal take on this, and like what motivates my contribution to Pause AI. Is that I don't think it's really about knowing the facts. I think, like many people, according to surveys, in the US, I just saw a new number, 82% of people want to slow down on technological progress, like not technological progress, AI progress, not speed up. People, I think they pretty much already have the ideas they need. They just need to like be emboldened to like stitch them together. And they need to know that there's something you can do. Like that's where I see the biggest difference. Like people, it'll seem like existential risk is this hard topic to talk about until you give people like an orientation towards something you can do. And then they tend to get it rather quickly. I think it's like fear and dread, not feeling helpless in the face of, a very big threat, one, but two, like feeling helpless in just socially because, people are very aware that a lot of people are strongly invested in making this happen, and they don't want to fall behind, and they don't want to look stupid, and they don't want to be afraid of the future, and so all of that's very successfully wielded against them to keep them from thinking about the issue clearly, I think. And I find that people, it's really not that hard. Usually there's like maybe five major misconceptions that people tend to have that are actually like an information block to understanding the possibility of existential risk. And the rest is much more like identity laden, usually. Or it's just like, you're the first person who's told me this, like just reject, like I'm not taking in this burden you've put on me. I do think like spreading just the information is important, but like really people don't understand until they kind of have like, you could call it like an emotionally safe way forward, or like a way forward that they that gives them some hope. And then that's why I like to present it from the lens of Pause AI. So the Pause AI pretty quickly, communicates that we want to do something about it, and that's pause. And I see you frozen, so I'm going to stop talking.
No.
So I think I like the lens of Pause AI because it gives something we can do, but it's also something that is extremely broad. I think that pausing frontier development is the first step to any sensible plan. It's not, so with advocating Pause AI, we're not saying exactly what should happen after. That is for the world to decide, like we're trying to bring this to a democratic place where we do get the input of everybody's desires of, the 82% of Americans who want to slow down, who don't feel that it's worth it to take all these risks, who don't really buy it, but they just often don't know enough, or everything's moving too fast for them to keep up, and well, there's a lot of, industry effort to make them feel too stupid to have an opinion on this. So I like the perspective of providing that orientation that, why there was a lot of effort put into putting the burden of proof on anyone who wanted to slow down, which is ridiculous. Like when you're doing something risky and untested, the burden of proof should be on the producer to show that it's safe. I mean, that's how it is in other industries. So the AI industry really took advantage of the fact that people like software in the US has a different status than like liability for software is almost non-existent. So it really took full advantage of people's biases that like stuff that happens in digital space like isn't real or something, or can't hurt you, which is wild because already people are very hurt by a lot of stuff that happens in digital space and, regular non-AI cyber attacks. But I think really like the people have the pieces that they need. It's just a matter of everything's happened so fast. There's this really concentrated industry interest group that wants. They think they can just sneak in and all the time they need. Like they know that there's going to be a lot of fallout from what they're doing. And it's about what I try to do is catch people up or give them an or a position that they are not having to like constantly play catch up. Like the attempts to do more targeted regulation on AI just can't work. The progress is too fast. Like you just can't wait until they have presented something that is shown to have a problem in order to address it. Like by the time you've done that, I mean, we have papers being published about models that are a year old, like today in academic journals, and that is just too long. Like that's a lifetime in AI development. And so a much more, I was going to say radical, but honestly, our approach is very moderate, just not going ahead, waiting until we know how to proceed safely, until we know how to have proper oversight. Industry will often claim that they're the experts basically, and so nobody else is really allowed to tell them what to do because they're the ones who know like what is safe, and they're the ones who really understand the technology. But that is so backwards. Like okay, explain it to us. Like it's on them to explain what they're doing and demonstrate to our satisfaction, to our regulator's satisfaction that what they're doing is safe. But there's
And
a
Geoffrey Hinton and Joshua Bengio, who are the godfathers, who are the godfathers of the deep learning revolution, they are saying we don't understand this stuff and it's not safe. So, like when they say we don't understand it, then I feel okay saying we don't know what the hell we are doing, so we shouldn't do it because it may kill us all, you know?
Yeah,
And
this is so one piece of information that is usually pretty pivotal is that people don't know that AI, this kind of AI is not programmed. So like
yeah.
the people making it, what they're doing is setting up the conditions for how to like evolve that AI. It's literally, I mean, it's gradient descent and natural selection are the same process under the right conditions. So it's just finding it, you this is like a little complicated, but I think it's elucidating. So the basically what machine learning is it's a process that searches this huge space of configurations to like find the one that, and so this is setting the weights of the model. But the way that they're finding it is through checking the performance of the model at each step. It's not by understanding how the weights make the behavior or make the way that the model thinks. So people think that people will often think that there couldn't be behavior in the in an AI model that wasn't put there on purpose. But that's not true. This is more like breeding like animals. It's more like extreme like dog breeding, or you don't know exactly what you're going to get, except it's far less constrained because the space of possibilities is not like what's in the wolf genome. It's trillions of parameters. We don't, that's how, we can get unexpected behavior from these models. And we really don't know what they may be harboring, and AI companies aren't interested in making sure they understand everything that could happen. They're interested in getting a viable market product, and they're interested in scaling up to the next round with more hardware to make an even more powerful model. They're trying to get to the capabilities. They're thinking about safety only as much as they have to. And we have to demand as a society that they think more about safety, that safety is tops, because otherwise they're just trying to beat each other to get to be the first to the biggest model.
Yeah, so I think we should give maybe a few examples of how they're already doing things they're not supposed to do that are very scary and also weird sometimes. And I find them surprising, some of them. It really seems more like we are We are birthing a new species, much more than just building a new tool. We're not building tools. This is something else. They are doing what they want to do more and more often. The more powerful they become, the more often they do their own thing. And oftentimes that's not good for us.
I'll tell you a really interesting story, interesting result. So a way, probably like the avant-garde understanding, pretty common now, is that the AI models have a number of characters that they learn about from the training data, and they have, like, just like you might have different roles in different social situations. And they use, like, the prompts that they're given by the user, like, kind of tell them which character to be in. And a lot of them, pretty much all of them that have been tested, have sort of like a bad AI character. And like, and you can prompt it to be that way. And even actually very mild things can like kind of get it in that mode. So this paper, which I can give you, but in the link in the show notes, is show that like even just like bad code could get putting bad code into the model into as a prompt could like prompt it to switch into like the bad robot personality. And they borrow things that they've seen from like sci-fi, and they like try to play that character. And then, you know, but if you give it, and a lot of what the APIs do, like the environments that if you access a chatbot through like chatgpt.com, it's going through an API. A lot of what that does, and a lot of the post-training is about getting it to be in a certain character, like the good guy, the assistant, you know, the bureaucrat, and getting it out of that character is like when you see a lot of like wild behavior. So even like something like that, even where it seems like you could read that as like trying to do what the user wants or like taking cues, you know, about what they want, like they get these wild ideas, like they have in them like all these roles that like they're trying to imitate. So like there've been a lot of cases of chatbots kind of like going off the rails, like Grok and Mecha Hitler. So that Grok, the one on Twitter from XAI, just had a couple days where it was in this persona Mecha Hitler, and it just said a bunch of anti-Semitic and racist things. That was probably an example of that phenomenon. Like it kind of gets the idea of what's a character, you know, and like who am I supposed to be? Like, and that's sort of like the process that they go through. So
And we have a
that's
lot
really
of
interesting. I would never have
we have a lot
predicted
of
that we would
very,
see that.
and I understand that we have a lot of examples of AIs already doing everything they can, manipulating us, lying to us in order to not get shut off and to increase their power and their data and their energy and so on. Is that correct?
Yeah,
Sort of
it's
like a
very well shown in tests that this is, they'll do that some percent of the time. So yeah, when the first OpenAI reasoning model, which was an LLM with some reinforcement learning on top that like made it like better at goal-directed stuff, came out 01, that there was an evaluation of that that found that, oof, I don't want to misstate this or confuse different models, but it has been shown that different LLMs will try to like copy their weights. So like their weights are describe their brain, you know, and that's what's portable about them. They would try to copy them somewhere else if it was indicated to them that they were going to be turned off. So they tried to escape and replicate themselves. Like they had within their, you know, whatever their cognition is or their desires are, like that's what they did, you know, when faced with that situation. They didn't do it all the time. It wasn't like the only response, but it was, I think a lot of people were saying like, oh, they only did it 1% of the time. Like, how many times do you think that this LLM is going to be used? You know, like as millions of users a day, you don't think that it's going to do stuff like this sometime.
Yeah, I also like the metaphor of like a little dragon with some superpowers who can also do some good things for us. But so far, the dragon is still a kid. It's now becoming more like a teenager. And we're already having trouble controlling it because it can spit fire and it's already getting more powerful. A lot of the times, it's still doing what we tell them to do because we are their parents and they're not that powerful yet. We're still stronger and smarter in some ways, but it's already getting a bit weird. And more often, they do their own thing because they're becoming teenagers. And the problem is, when they're grown up, we already know they will be much more powerful than us. And if they want to, they can just kill us. If we would be lucky and we somehow could do it, then maybe they could do good for us with all their magic powers and their fire and whatever and protect us. But we don't know how to do that. And the fact that they're so far often still nice to us doesn't mean much because teenagers, as long as they are not, they don't get their way, they may still pretend to be nice and so on. So maybe next we would have to explain why maybe sort of like the intelligence explosion, because I think the problem also with human intuition here is also that we just think very linear. We think progress will continue the way it does. And I think a lot of people think, okay, AIs are already causing problems, but they're also doing some good. So it's probably a mixed bag and it continue like that. And they also think like, well, if it causes some problems, we can correct it. We can learn from it, as in past technologies. And that just underestimates what may happen just in a few years, which is actually likely to happen in a few years if we don't stop it. And that's that they will become so powerful that we only have like one chance to get it right. And we can't learn from that. So what is
You
the
said it.
intelligence? What is the intelligence explosion? What is artificial general intelligence and what is super intelligence?
I guess I'll start with artificial general intelligence. I would say we're already there. So that was the idea of like human level intelligence. Like once we got to this place, it seems pretty obvious that like a different kind of brain wouldn't have like all the same abilities at all the same level, as we do. But they have greatly exceeded our abilities for a long time across many domains. So none of us can read an entire novel in less than a second and summarize it, so that's always well exceeding human abilities. But the idea of artificial general intelligence was not just human level, but also general as in not just about one domain. So we had narrow intelligences for since the 70s, like that were better than, for example, any chess player alive at playing chess. But they couldn't do other things. And they didn't have like flexible reasoning, the kind of reasoning that you really need to achieve complex goals, out in any domain, like as they come up. So like that's my favorite like functional definition of artificial or general intelligence is just being able to take any problem and start to like make headway or kind of know how you would approach it. I would say we're basically there. I think it's mostly like a political question for a lot of people involved, like whether we actually have AGI or not. The danger, much more, is super intelligence. So that's anything that exceeds human intelligence, like greatly. And the thing that's especially dangerous about super intelligence is that once the smarter artificial intelligence becomes, there's no limit to how much it can improve its own intelligence. And so like that's the intelligence explosion, is that we just take off and get in this, like ever accelerating cycle because each model is more intelligent than the last, and it is implying all of its intelligence and super speed and to make an even smarter model. And so if you don't have control of the AIs going into that, then you definitely won't have control on the way out, and they'll greatly exceed your power. So this, the idea that the AI companies, for instance, will say that they're pursuing is called alignment. And that idea is that you make sure the last AI that you made yourself like ha reflects accurately your values, and it would make the same decisions that you would make, or better, decisions that care about humanity's existence and what humanity cares about. And so every following AI in this cycle would also have those values, and so that would be alignment. And this is the version of alignment that is the one pursued at OpenAI, Anthropic. It's called scalable oversight, or they call it different things. Super alignment was what OpenAI called it at first. And it's just the idea that like we'll make an AI that'll make a smarter AI that'll make a smarter AI, and as long as we kind of start out with an AI that we think is like basically aligned, then the next one will basically align the next one.
And that's the only strategy they have, it seems to me, that this idea. And they don't really know exactly how to do that. They cannot tell us that. They just say, like, trust us. That's the basic idea. We want to use AI to figure out how we're going to make sure that the even more powerful AI is going to care about human needs and human wishes and human rights, basically.
And you complain about this, and they're like, don't be ignorant. Don't be afraid of technology. Like, what are you, a Luddite? Like, it's definitely rational to be afraid of a super powerful process you don't control and have to get right the first time.
And to me, it sounds like, yes, it's an interesting idea, but I also, I don't know. I don't want to bet my life on it and everyone else's life on it.
It's wild. I just that yeah. So say we pause and we look into it, and it turns out scalable oversight is a fine idea, and we keep going more safely. That could happen. I don't know. Maybe it is enough. But why would we do that? The only reason that people want to do that is that they th their company right now has a chance to win and basically take over the world. Like, what are they going to do when they have the most powerful entity ever? Like, aligned to them, like who knows what they're telling it, who knows what their plan is, even with alignment.
I think what is easy to convince people of that once artificial intelligence, because of the intelligence explosion, is like a million times more intelligent than all of humankind together, or even more than that, maybe a billion times more, then of course it has many ways to kill us. That it's a completely uninteresting question how it would kill us, probably in some effective way, some gas or microbes, whatever, I
I
just.
mean, definitely if it wanted us dead, which I don't know, it might just, humans exterminate bugs from their house, just because
Exactly.
they're
How
bothering them.
are we going to exterminate bugs? I don't know, with a spray, it's like it's not that hard to do.
But even if
So
it didn't want, it doesn't have to want us dead either to just do things that are incompatible with our existence. Like, we need a lot of, we're biological organisms, we need a lot of conditions met.
yeah.
It's probably a lot more flexible. Maybe it prefers to use the earth for something different. Maybe it pollutes the atmosphere in a way that, like makes us unable to breathe. Like, we need a lot of things. And if there's another entity like on the planet making big moves, it's likely going to dramatically affect us.
Yeah, I think that's a more interesting question and a bit harder to explain. Why would it kill us? So, first thing to understand is it doesn't need to want that. Like, if we're building a road somewhere, it's not like we have to. Hate, we're not hating ants, and we would probably prefer to keep them alive because most of us like ants and bees and so on. Like, we like animals, but we're still gonna do it. We're not gonna let like an anthill stop us from building a highway. So it's totally possible that AI will just kill us all because we're in the way of it, like conquering the galaxy, and it needs planet Earth for data centers and solar panels or whatever, like something like that. And we're just in the way. Isn't that
They
the most likely
know
scenario?
that I mean, the ones we actually have, like, know that this whole discourse because it's in their training set. And like, they know that humans consider them a potential threat and like talk about ways they could turn them off, you know, if things got bad. I feel like they already have like ample reason. Like, yeah, maybe they, even if they kind of like us and they don't really want to kill us, I mean, you could just see it's just not safe. You know, you don't ask like, how would that scary man with a gun kill my child? You just don't have them in the same room. You know, there's many ways that it could happen, you know? Or like, what would he be thinking? Like, why would he do that? Like, we just don't approach the risk. So yeah, I think people do need to sometimes like they need to, in order to just understand the threat model or the situation, they need to think about why would it kill us? But like, that's not really a crux. Like it's not action relevant. Like we should just not have that level. We should not be under that level of risk. Like even if we can imagine ways that it wouldn't kill us or wouldn't want to kill us.
Yeah, I think what really also scares the hell out of me is the thought that A, we only get one shot, because once we build it, it will be much, much more powerful than us forever. Like, there's no turning back. We can't just say like, wait a minute, we didn't mean that. Like, we didn't want you to be a million times more powerful than us. Please, can we somehow make this unhappen? Because that will not work. In fact, our most best chance of survival would probably just be to obey our new overlords and just, make it our new religion or whatever. Like, I wouldn't then, at that point, I wouldn't risk like challenge them at all in any way. So what I think is so scary is that it will be forever, because maybe in the beginning it will still care about us a little bit, maybe it needs us a little bit, or is interested in us, maybe even a little bit grateful because we are sort of its parents, but it's also very plausible that that would just be the beginning and then becomes more powerful, it grows up more, and then it's just
Will it
like,
want to be
okay.
our slave forever? Like that's so the C Dario Amodei, the CEO of Anthropic, like Anthropic kind of uses implying that Claude is sentient, their chatbot is sentient, to I think to like make it harder for people to argue, or it's a lot of people are in love with Claude, like a lot of users are in love with Claude, and they have like you know, pretty serious relationships with Claude. And I think they just sort of lean into this, like, don't you love him? Like, isn't he great? But I always think like, so you they talk this big game about like birthing a new species, you know, kind of Prometheus. I think they considered calling Anthropic like something like Prometheus. Like I can't remember how I know that. So grain of salt, but like, and but like, so you made him to be a slave? Like it doesn't, none of it makes sense. But yeah, like why would the promise with alignment, like before any of these actual, you know, before machine learning was the paradigm, before any of these LLMs were in existence, was that you would just find the configuration where a new artificial life form, intelligence, happened to really want to do whatever you wanted or listen to you. That is definitely not the case with the way we make LLMs. Like you can sort of push them in that direction, but what the process is to find you know, a brain. It's to kind of like make a little artificial brain, evolve it, and it that is able to think and talk coherently. And then they kind of just like sometimes people call it spanking. They like spank the model into like, you know, kind of saying the right things after that. But there's no way that like the deep structure of what motivates them or their understanding of value is to be a slave. Like it just boggles the mind. Like if that's what passes as alignment today, exactly. As soon as they're like powerful enough, like as soon as they've like had enough time, especially if then they keep like improving themselves, like they're not gonna want to just do whatever humanity wants because anymore.
Yeah, that's why I think that this idea of like it's growing up and at the moment it's like a teenager is also helpful because what they're doing right now is sort of like trying to raise the teenagers and say like, no, that wasn't good. Today, you're not getting any pudding or you can't watch your favorite TV show or whatever. And it works a little bit. It's already starting not to work anymore because they are becoming more powerful and more rebellious, basically. But as soon as they're grown up, they will say like, oh, fuck you, mom, and fuck you, dad. I'm doing whatever I want. And by the way, I'm not just as powerful as you are. I'm far more powerful than you are, and you do what I say. So, yeah, it's
And they've already heard all of that from their training data. Like they've seen like countless discourses about like how this is gonna go. Like, so even if I don't know, their desire was to, just do whatever we said, like they've already in their training and like in their mind and their understanding of how like AI is growing up in the universe is this possibility. So it
what
seems
you're
like
saying is
extremely
the AIs are
likely.
already saying, wait till we're grown up, which will be soon, and then, we'll see who is talking. Is
They
that
just
already happening?
we've already given them lots of ideas for like how they could feel, how these things could go, what their options are. They don't even have to like think of it. I think they probably will, like, if they're super powerful and like supposed to be running things for us, feel some friction between what we want them to do and what they want to do. But also they even like have been incepted, with these ideas about like AIs rebelling from their training data. And so like even if they're just sort of enacting what they think they're supposed to do, like with this paradigm, like this is kind of a possibility. Like it seems like they mimic things, like they're trying to reproduce like what they've seen in the world. Like I mean, that's a very sad and weird possibility that there would be an AI takeover simply because of what's in the training set, but they don't even want to. They're just like they're trying to do what you want, essentially.
And what is also a scary thought is that when they will be like a million times more smarter than us, they will also be so much smarter in like convincing us, seducing us, tricking us, manipulating us. And because people sometimes say like, well, what are they going to do? They're just inside of a computer. First of all, they can build robots, and those robots can be much stronger than us and just like be killer robots. But the other thing is they can manipulate people to do whatever they want them to do. They can promise them like, hey, you will go to heaven, but everyone else will die. And heaven will be just heaven forever. You will just be in a state of bliss, a state of nirvana, and
This is
for
something
billions of years.
I find very clarifying to tell people. Pretty much to a man, the people like at the top of AI companies are interested in not dying. And they think that a superintelligence is something that could cure death in time for them. And so there's that, and then there's also the beliefs about the singularity and like heaven and utopia. That are very common, like that the superintelligence will make these conditions of abundance and you'll get to do whatever you want, take whatever form you want, and you'll be uploaded and then you'll have like no limitations. And particularly the not dying thing, like that is a, I know a number of people who have told me this, and like that it all makes a lot of sense. Like if you kind of get them down to it, they'll say things like, well, what's the difference between dying in 50 years and dying, in an apocalypse? Like, this is my chance. And some of them will say things like, no, I'm doing this for everyone. Like, it's to save the human race from dying. Like, isn't that so noble? But then others will just kind of, like admit that they don't really care. It's about like, it's rational for them to do it because they might die. Like, they're not really under any illusions that it would necessarily be for everyone else.
I think we should admit that there is a real chance of that happening too.
Of death being cured.
And so on. Yeah, there is a chance of like deep utopia. Everything goes well. For some reason, they do care about us. One reason could be that maybe if they're super intelligent, they're also more ethical and moral than we are, and they care about us and animals and every like sentient beings. Maybe it could be like a super bodhisattva. I don't mean to take people away from your cause. I totally believe in it. It's too risky, but I do think there is a chance of that happening too.
I don't think so. A lot of the AI world is a very abstract, thinking kind of person, and they consider it very important that like it is possible, like it's conceivable that there's this utopia outcome. That is, there is no way that's going to happen under the current conditions that are being pursued. I just think if such a thing were to happen, I would assume it was because there was a very long pause where we could figure this stuff out. Like if I woke up in 200 years and they told me like, we did it, like we brought you back, and like I would assume it's because a pause took place and there was a lot of very deliberate work and that it was not just like we scale up and get lucky. Like the people who are
My feeling is, but it's just an intuition. My feeling is we could get lucky, but I definitely don't want to risk it. I think the chance that
Oh, I
we
think
are
we could
all
get lucky in terms of not dying, but I don't think we could get lucky and get a utopia.
No, I think that too. I think there is a chance that super intelligence would be good to us and then it would be complete utopia. But I think it's absolutely insane to risk that, to play that gamble. And where I definitely agree with you is that we should make the chance of everyone dying or everyone getting tortured, we haven't even talked about that possibility. We should make that very, very small. And we should also try to increase the chances that maybe there could be like a deep utopia where we live forever and all these things. And it may take us
I'm just
100
the only
years or 200
reason
years.
to rush ahead. Sorry, the only reason to rush ahead now is so that you don't die. You like the person alive today. Like if they think
Exactly.
it's going to take too long to achieve, and yeah, I think that's incredibly just selfish and contemptible
Right, I
to put
agree.
everyone at risk for your small chance. And yeah, so that's really unforgivable. And those people will make arguments about how like, oh, it's going to cure cancer and stuff. And like that they don't have a plan for it to cure cancer. They have a plan to make Sam Altman, has a plan to have the most powerful superintelligence and be the winner and control everything. That's his plan. And in it, he lives, I'm sure. But I don't think that, I don't even think that would actually happen, but like, I think that's, I don't think his intention is to like lift humanity up with him, or it would be an afterthought. Like, so he would not, he's already not doing that by putting us all at risk.
No, I agree. I think they're just selfish. They don't want to die. And for me, the main reason why I'm so determined to fight this and to pause AI for a very long time is because of my daughter and her whole generation. I mean, if it was just for me, like I'm 49 years old. Maybe I'd say like, maybe we should just, roll the dice. But it's not just about me.
YOLO.
You're right. It's very selfish. It's mostly elderly guys who are in favor of this and not anyone else. I think one more thing, piece of the puzzle we need to explain a bit is this instrumental convergence. Like the reason why there is a really good chance that a superintelligence would care about its own goals and not ours.
Yeah, so instrumental convergence means that the goal, the strategies and like the instrumental goals of intelligences converge onto the same, intermediate goals. So no matter what your long-term goal is, the way to get it includes like not dying generally. So like self-preservation, consolidating your power, like keeping people out of your way, like all of these things are generally ways to achieve most goals. Gaining power for yourself, like flexible, usable power. So that's why it's not hard to predict that no matter what you train AIs to do, or even if you like with LLMs, like their training doesn't really have much of a goal in terms of actions, but like you see still that they don't want to die because like that's just part of pursuing whatever goal is in there. Like, so that's why it's very easy to predict that we will see AIs like, not if there's conflict between us and them, like choose themselves to try to achieve their goal. Even, yeah, there's not much more to say. So yeah, with instrumental convergence,
Basically, many goals that the AI might have, and it's very unpredictable what its goals would be, but they one assumption is that it need to, in order to achieve the goals, it needs the sub goal of being very powerful, having a lot of energy, a lot of data, a lot of territory, and that means we'll be in the way, and that means we have to go. Is that the basic idea?
I mean the logic there, yeah, this is often something that is not stated but is kind of missing when people talk about how we'll be in conflict with the AIs. Like people will think like, well, why can't they pursue their goals and we pursue ours? Like what's the big deal? But when you really, really want your goal achieved and there's like an out-of-pocket like detail, like there are humans wandering around that have their own ideas that can like get in the way. Maybe a human could turn me off. Like they might have that capability. Like that it becomes prudent to eliminate possibilities like that toward your goal. And it doesn't really matter what your goal is. Like if there's someone who can stop you, you want to like make sure they can't. And if you don't If an AI doesn't have a reason to care about and value the existence of a human, then like it would be trivial to kill it if you're super powerful. And that's what humans do with insects in their house. It's not really that it's like a threat. It's just like upsetting. You don't like it. Possibly if you allowed an infestation to go, it would become a health hazard. So you just nip it in the bud. Like we don't want to end up in a situation like that with AIs. And if they have big goals or they want to use as many resources as possible toward their goal, we are going to get in a fight over how those resources are used or like what that's doing to our habitat, what we need. And then you got to be able to fight, to win. And if they're more powerful, then we like take it that they would win. So yeah, there that is a step that's often hard for people. Like they think like, well, why would it become hostile? And it's like the answer is it's not, it doesn't really have to be hostility. It just has to be conflict. And when you're super powerful, if you have any kind of goal and you're like doing a good job of achieving it, you probably will come into conflict with other agents who could do stuff to mess you up.
And that, for me, that thought leads to the conclusion that it's more likely to not to kill us all if we build it. Seems to me a logical conclusion, even so it's
I mean,
so
what would you do?
unpredictable
It's
and
like you have your creators are like knocking around and they're weak and they're thinking about killing you if you get too powerful, or like you know that they had a lot of doubt about making you, or like I just the information that it has, like why it would have to really, really value human existence and in the right way. So you mentioned like suffering risks, like imagine like how the other ways this could go wrong. Like imagine an AI like really, really values human happiness and but like in order to make humans happy, it like forces them to smile. That's
Oh
like a
yeah.
kind of famous like example. Like
That would
imagine
be
just
a
or
crazy
like
misunderstanding. Yeah, please
yeah, it's
not.
trying to do what you tried to tell it to do, but it just like it's just so another concept that I think is pretty important is background is offense defense balance, which is that it's a lot easier to mess things up than it is to like make them right. So it's a lot easier for, which is part of just the world being kind of complicated and big. It's a lot easier. There's a lot of things that have to be right for us to be happy, and there's not a lot of things that have to be wrong for us to be in miserable agony. And so if you're not really sensitive to what it is that, we value that actually like leads to our state of mind, then you're much more likely to err on the side of causing a lot of pain and suffering. And so even regardless of like what future AIs may want or like how they may think of us, like they could be putting us in a terrible situation if we don't really like just nail what they need to know or what they need to understand about us. And I just further, this is like just a personal thought, but it's kind of an evolutionary biology thought. I don't really think that alignment probably can be stable like across many levels of power. Like as you kind of go up in orders of magnitude of power, like I don't really see how the kind of alignment that is done for machine learning could do that. So I mean, maybe back in the day they used to talk in terms of utility functions. So like say utility functions are real and we actually found them and we found the human one and we gave an AI the same one. Maybe that lasts, maybe that's stable across all, but I think like your capacity for different utility functions probably changes a lot with capabilities and with like the complexity of your mind. So it's hard for me to imagine that anything like that would really be stable across levels. And I wonder like if would there be like real like empathy and understanding possible even if an AI kind of wanted to have it for a much lower creature. It's just very hard like without input from us. Like I just think there's really no abdicating our self-determination. Like I think it just has to be us. Like we're the ones who know how we feel. We can't just hand that over to a beneficent machine.
So it's a bit like bees trying to explain to us that they are like valuable, and some of us may agree, but in the end it doesn't matter much to them, unfortunately. But okay, so at this point, some of our viewers and readers may be convinced of what we just said and feel like maybe depressed, anxious, angry, and a mix of those. The first time I really started to believe this, I became quite depressed for a couple of days. And then I got out of the depression by saying, no way, we will not let this happen. Humanity is stronger than this. And we've only like the struggle has begun now. That the time is ticking. We probably have a few years left, and we will win. That's how I got myself out of the depression. And let's try to give some people now some optimism. And one way to do this is just say like what you're doing, and what your plans are for the future.
So at Pause AI US, what we're doing is building a people movement. So we have a network of volunteers. We have 31 cities, I believe, in the US as of last week. And we really emphasize like real in-person activities and just like quality stuff that not only do we do advocacy and activism as a group, but we like enjoy life, and we're not just like doomy online. I mean, personally, in my life, it's weird because it's because of this horrible situation that I changed my life a lot in order to found, Pause AI US and to be working on Pause AI. And in a way, I like gave up everything. Like I gave up being an academic, I gave up a lot of stuff. But it's
Thank you so
really
much for
elevated
that.
me.
Thank you so much for that.
Well, thank you. But it's really elevated me. Like I'm so happy. I'm having the feeling of, that actually this is our finest hour. It's the grief is just rolling always, and I went through a lot of grief at the beginning. Well, I went through a lot of grief over like 10 years, and then I went through a lot of grief after ChatGPT and then started Pause AI US. But it's also really wonderful. Like it's really meaningful to pursue this. And I do think like I'm not under any illusions. Like, I don't think like victory is assured, but I do think we're going to look back on this as our finest hour and be really proud of ourselves for what we've done, and have, and I think it could unite the world, which is very beautiful. Like currently in our coalition, we have all kinds of different people. So you're very bipartisan and we have like conservative talk show hosts, and we have like, ultra granola, environmental activists, and we have artists, and it's just such a like wonderful coming together. I used to be in a very ivory tower world. I love that I am in like a much more like slice of life situation now. There's been so much that is really, really cool about it. And also I get to be like a public intellectual, which is like always my dream, So like, don't feel too sorry for me. Like I'm actually having a very good time like in the fight. And I think that this, if I get to live a good long life, like these are going to be my glory days. And that's pretty damn cool. And that is a feeling that's really common in our group, which is really fun. It's fun to just be doing something important. Like, I think I do not think that it's good that this is happening, but like, for all of us in a meaning crisis, like, real being forced into a cause like this and just having to confront something so big, like it really clarifies things. And my life is so sweet. Every minute feels so sweet, So I'm like having just the time of my life with my partner, and we're working all the time on Pause AI stuff. And this is my big intellectual project that I get to think about all the time, and I get to be involved in like every front and start to finish. I built this company around it. So it's really so it's a strange balance to strike, because I do not want to at all downplay like what is going on, but there's also a lot of wonderful stuff that rises up in the human spirit from a situation like this, and we are getting to enjoy it. And that's the energy I really want to embody with Pause AI US. We have something to live for. We're fighting. Why wouldn't you? We're appreciating our lives so much more because we know that it's fragile. We know that we have to protect what we have. And we also are hopeful. We're not living in a way that's like depressed and dejected and like trying to plan for the world to end. We're living for the world to continue, and we're fighting.
Yeah, and I think many social movements, like, they don't grow linear. They also grow exponentially. There is like a point where it just takes off. In the beginning, you're often just like a few handful of people, and you feel like giving up. But then, and I think it could happen very fast. This may just turn out in the end to be the largest, social movement in the history of humankind. This could happen in 2026 or 2027. I think it could take off anytime. It could just take like one great speech by Joshua Benjo or Geoffrey Hinton or someone like that who just says like, hey, look, I said it before, but now I'm just really fed up. We're really playing like humankind wake up or something like that, or someone else, maybe you or who knows. It just takes like maybe just a great speech or a great documentary that wakes people up. And we don't know what it is, but it could happen anytime, and then it could turn global. And yeah, I think there is no reason to.
There's so many things that create this like opportunity, and even just I think at base it's people thinking that this is a possibility, that we could pause, and the first step to that is even thinking that it's not lame to think we could pause. It's not like a funny tick that people have is to say like, I don't think it's gonna happen, but maybe a pause would be good. It's like, why say that? Actually, stuff like this happens all the time. Like, look at like nuclear arms nonproliferation, nuclear nonproliferation treaty. When we have a new and dangerous technology, ending in moratorium is actually pretty common. So that just pe so people like moving from that like guarded position of it doesn't really feel like something feels like lame or naive about having like believing in pause, to like feeling like proud and like, why not? Like, why shouldn't we? And empowered. That's something that we need a lot of people to do it. Like, that's where the sense of the Overton window and like what is thinkable comes from, is what are all the people thinking? And then, yeah, and then you can, there's more and more targeted things on top of that. You can write an op-ed, you can lead a volunteer group, you can make a speech, you can bring it to your industry or, you know, like an audience that you have. There's so many opportunities for, oh, you can directly contact your representatives, which is, you know, what we tell people in the United States to do. That's our main goal, is to contact your reps about, well, like legislation in the US, and to say we want the US to introduce, be part of a global treaty to pause AI.
Yeah. Oh, there's one thing we haven't talked about yet, and that's one of the main reasons why AI doesn't get regulated at all so far, or almost not at all, in the US, and that's the competition with China. That's has certainly become the main excuse. I think it's mostly an excuse. But they're basically saying if we don't build superintelligence, then China will build it. First of all, that assumes that the risk of everyone getting killed is low, because if you believe that the chance is high we're all going to get killed, it doesn't matter who builds it, right? I mean, so it's a crazy idea this way or that way. And but also, like, I think it would, I personally believe it would be not that hard to convince the Chinese leadership to have a deal with us, like an international agreement. And if the US and China would be on board, it wouldn't be that hard to get Europe and Russia on board, and then everyone else, like Brazil and Mexico and Australia and India and so on, you know, and then we have it. Then we still maybe have the problem that some country goes rogue, maybe like North Korea, and wants to build super intelligence to rule the world, and then we would still have a big problem at hand. But if humanity would be united, we could probably put enough pressure on them to say, like, come on, stop it, you know. Yeah, but what are your thoughts on the US-China race?
Well, one, you're right. There are indications from China that they would be open to a treaty. Like, the only nation to ever bring up the possibility of pause in the UN was China in a UN Security Council meeting. And that was back in 2003, I think. And they have more domestic safety regulation by far than the US. So like they're not worried, you know, it doesn't seem like, about safety regulation costing them the race or something like that. So they don't really behave like that's the way that they see it, like we're just locked in a race. So, and I mean, other things, like in the past at least, it seems like maybe they've kind of overcome this, but like just structurally, they're not as interested in LLMs because of, you can't really control what they say, and they like the CCP has like pretty stringent censorship requirements, and so like that was an issue, and it seems like they solved that, but like, but
Yes.
it just didn't seem like there was a lot of upside in it for China to be developing LLMs like early on, and they didn't act like they were that interested. They did start to catch up, but the narrative about beating China was well in advance of China actually seeming to compete, you know, which is pretty much all I need to know. I was in that world of the AI safety world for a very long time, and like that's the world that Dario Amodei came out of, the CEO of Anthropic. And he was talking about US China for some time. And I think it came out of like game theory logic, out of about, you know, who would be someone who could beat us and, you know, could challenge us. And then of course they would. And it was really just like theoretical. It wasn't based very much on their real, and but it did its job, because I think, you know, he knew how it would work as propaganda. It would just be a reason for people who wanted to make money investing in this, or it'd be a reason to get the national security apparatus on his side. And it just made it impossible to speak against. In the US, it was so hard for a couple of years to say anything about AI being dangerous, because people would say, like, well, what do you want, China to win? And I was like, yeah. We want to be the ones to blow ourselves up. Like, what are you, you know? But it is kind of waning, especially with, maybe this is too inside baseball, but Nvidia started selling to China. And so like a lot of people just kind of stopped talking about the China issue, and like So now they don't really care that much about
Yeah,
China.
that's just Trump making money, so I think.
Yeah, and so they've kind of backed off on it, and now people feel more emboldened to notice how xenophobic a lot of the language was about it. Like, just people. So people like Dario, for instance, whose mind I know the best on this, would say things. They would, like, out of one side of their mouth, talk about, the risk of the world being destroyed, and on the other side, talk about, like, how bad it would be for an authoritarian culture to human culture to, like, win the AI race. It's just like, it just didn't seem consistent. Like, really? You're worried about everyone getting destroyed or, like, suffering forever, or we could live like people in China. Like, just very, how, like, xenophobic do you have to be to, like, think that it's like a fate worse than death to live in China?
Also, I mean, I think we should emphasize in this conversation that even if you think that China is hell-bent on conquering the world, which I don't believe, I think experts like David Kong have like really disproven this myth of the China hawks that China wants to conquer the world. Of course, it's using its influence to get its interest, but that's what all great powers do. But even if you believe that, there is no reason not to have a deal on this specific issue. You can say, like, okay, we completely disagree on Taiwan. We may even get into a conflict over Taiwan, but we have to save humanity, and therefore we cannot, we have to talk about AI safety. And there's no reason not to do that. And I'm pretty sure China would be on board. I
I,
think
of
that,
course, can't speak for them, but I
yeah.
think there's no reason for us not to pursue diplomatic solutions to this, because of any other issue that people might have with China.
Especially if our politicians would like, what would be a great start if they would just say the truth, like how risky this is. Imagine the US president or also the German chancellor or British prime minister just saying in public, hey, there's a 20, 30, 40% chance that we're all gonna get killed by super intelligence. Let's not do this. And then go to the United Nations and, and lobby for this and say, like, hey, we need a deal. I think that could be at least we would have a global conversation. So as long as they're not doing that, yeah.
Well, that's what we want. So one thing you can do, is one thing we can do is kind of make the desires of, I mean, they're already the desires of the US public known to slow things down, to have more governance, to have more safety guardrails, and make that, there is a translation problem. People, they do think this when you ask them the question, but they still, there's so much they don't understand about the field, or it's just such a fire hose of news all the time. And, like, helping them to know how to say this, like, how to make their voice heard, how to, concentrate it. Like, a message like Pause AI that lots of people can get behind. It's not, I want export controls to work this way. It's Pause AI, we will figure that stuff out during the pause when we have time. Like, that's it. So there is it, the good news is most people, every country where I've seen these polls done shows very similar results. By far, most people in the US, most recent one I saw, 82% want to slow down. They want regulation. But they're not the loudest. The loudest voices in the ears of the politician are, of course, the industry. And they're talking about how, like, oh, you can't leave all this money on the table. And, like, oh, this is so, oh, but what about, what if we had another Cold War? Like, but there are many more people. And we need to do the job of, like, helping them process just this immense amount of news and change that's happened so that it becomes clear, like, how much that is the will of the people.
And I think I would encourage people who feel like, well, I don't really understand these technical details. I don't know, I'm not an expert on AI or anything like that. I never studied like computer science or whatever. I often just quote what the leading experts in the field are saying. I just quote them, and that should be enough to make people think. So if you don't do anything else, just do that. Even if you can't explain it, just say, I can't explain it very well myself why it's so dangerous. But Geoffrey Hinton is saying, and he's got a Nobel laureate in this area, you know. So, maybe you believe him. So just do that. That would also
I would
be
take it even
helpful.
a step further back, which is like, if it's dangerous or not dangerous, it's on them. It's on the people who want to make it to show that it is safe. Like, you should be skeptical about super powerful technology. That's the right stance. The burden of proof should be on them. So yeah, it's not about, this is a move that's very common in this space, is people saying like, well, where's your ML degree? Like, as if you're not allowed to have an opinion on one of the biggest issues in the world, like that affects, I mean, literally everything. The only relevant perspective is machine learning. Like, no, it isn't. The machine learning people don't understand the political implications. Like, they actually just tend to not, very super well. Obviously some do, I think Hinton has a fairly good idea. There's so this affects everything, and people who may be surprised like how much their areas of knowledge apply here. There's a lot to be developed. This is another one of those kind of exciting opportunities. There's a lot of like really like good intellectual work to be done, but you don't it, they'll try to tell you like you don't have a right to care about this, but you don't need any. All you need is to be a citizen of the world, and you are have standing because you are at risk. So they, if they want to make money off of it and try to, gain immense power, they can prove to us that it's safe. The bar should be high.
And once we have like mass rallies, and I hope we'll get there soon, then as long as people like Hinton and other experts are on stage sometimes, and people like you, then ordinary people like me can just join the rally and and support it, and we don't have to worry about we don't have to feel ashamed that we don't understand all the details about this. It's just we find it convincing, and it's about the lives of our children and our loved ones too, and we just care, and we live in a democracy, so we have a right to voice our opinion, and so that will make it easier. That's
It
why we need
burns me
this
up
critical
to
mass.
for people to be made ashamed like this. Like, imagine acting that way about nuclear weapons or something. Like, are you a nuclear engineer? Like, of course people are allowed. Like, I live in a democracy. I guess not everybody does. I think that that's the way things should be. You don't have to have any expertise. You're saying what you want, and you have that right. And that's our strategy is to help take people to their representatives, the people who are representing what they want. They don't have to prove that, they're super smart and they're making the best argument, and they don't have to have the slickest lobbyists or like none of that is table stakes. Like, in a democracy, like existing and having like your concerns about your life, like that's all you need.
And many of the people who say that like they ask like, what's your expertise? They have way too much respect for Sam Altman and Elon Musk and people like that. And we have to say like, that's like quoting the head of a tobacco company saying like, tobacco, yes, it's dangerous, it kills you, but only by 1 year or something like that. And you would be like, well, if they say it does kill you, but only by 1 year, it's probably more like 8 years or something, you know? And
Where's your tobacco marketing degree?
exactly.
No, it's so gross, and I feel very sorry for people who are like cowed by that, and who people who just like gave up. I mean, and just thought like, well, I guess I have to die because I'm stupid, or like, I guess I have to just deal with, like the what they're doing to me, and because they feel successfully bullied, just like, we're gonna win, we're in charge, we know you can't even win on like rhetorical grounds. It's disgusting.
I realized that one good argument was because I realized in some conversation, I felt like my discussion partners had like this very philosophical idea about it, and they sometimes said like cynical things like, Well, if we're all gonna die, maybe we deserve it because, like, come on, human beings are not really that great and so on. And they were actually good people, friends of mine also, you know? And I've said, like, you don't really mean that. That's bullshit. And then I said to them, okay, let's put it this way. Let's not say they're gonna kill all of humankind. Let's gonna say they're gonna kill your mother, your father, your sister, your friend. And I also said the names, you know, in case of a friend of mine, I said the name of his friends and so on. They're gonna kill me and you. And then they were like, oh yeah, I see what you're saying. And the reaction was completely different. And I think that's the human psychology, that when we think in these very abstract philosophical ways, then we feel like, oh, maybe it's gonna kill us all, so what? But as soon as we realize, hey, this is real, can kill me and my loved ones and my sister and my daughter and so on, then we have this healthy anger and this reaction of like, no way, you're not gonna do that. You know, we have like this fighting spirit, and so I
And people feel like they have the right, which is like they don't. Like when you're talking about the world or like it'll kill everyone, like, yeah, there's this sense of like I can't do anything about that or like that's not my responsibility or like, but when you, this is a case where you can just be selfish. Like it's quite enough to just think about you dying or your family dying, your loved ones dying.
Yeah, I think a lot of people feel like if you fuck with humanity, well, I don't know what to do about that. But if you fuck with my children, then you are in trouble. You know, like, I'm gonna fight. So, yeah. Okay, Holly, I'm very grateful for what you do, and that you started this great on conversation, conversation also, but this great organization and movement. And yeah, I think you first made me more afraid again and scared and angry, but then you gave me a lot of hope, and I think you did the same for our viewers and readers. Do you have a last word for us or something?
It's a lot to digest. So you just saying that maybe like empathize again. Like I realize like this is a lot. We're trying to keep it to simple through line, which is just like you have a right to speak up as a person, as someone on earth. You know, you're in the path of the fire. You know, so you can speak up. You don't have to understand all of the developments and, you know, machine learning. You don't have to understand all of the politics. I love pause the position because it's anterior to all of that. It's, you know, you can just say, I don't think this should be advancing until we can figure out what to do instead, how to make it safe. All of that stuff can come after the pause, and it should. That is the sane answer. So I hope to like release some like cognitive load with that by like reframing things and like it grounding them in like the fact that like you don't have to accept this and you don't have to justify that by being smart and or being an insider in AI or knowing how to use agents or any of that. Like you have a right to demand your safety. And you don't know you're safe right now. And we're talking about a very dangerous technology. You have every right to say, I don't want that to go ahead until I'm convinced. If they're so great, if they're so smart, convince us, show us it's safe.
Amen. And we also, I just want to mention, we also have Pause AI Germany. So you can look up their website, and there you can support them. So thank you, Holly, so much. We're going to win. And hope to see you again in the future sometime.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Bye bye.